Hey everybody, this is DJ Detour, and it is 3 o'clock, so it's time for my show Behind the Bit, where I will be talking to you about some different things today. And I'm going to start off with some natural survival traits of horses. And just a reminder, you are listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So the horse is a prey animal, and because they're prey animals, they have a very strong flight instinct, and it's a survival mechanism. Its natural predators are large animals such as cougars, wolves, and bears. And the horse's ability to outrun predators like this is very crucial. As humans, to be able to understand horses, we really need to understand this instinct that they have, because it's definitely going to affect other aspects of when you are handling a horse and are around them in any way, which kind of relates back to what I was talking about last week on my show, talking about bomb-proofing, because it's definitely, I don't want to say overcome because that's not the right word, but you can work with your horse's flight instinct to kind of get them used to some things that they might be seeing on a regular basis that are not harmful to them, such as plastic bags. And horses are one of the most perceptive of all domestic animals. Since they are the prey species, they have to be able to detect predators. And a stimulus that might be unnoticed by humans is often the cause for when horses get alarmed, or a lot of times we call it spookiness. As riders and trainers commonly mistake their reaction for bad behavior, it's definitely not bad behavior. We just have to be able to watch and look around and see what our horses are looking at and how they are perceiving it and what they think about it. Like, for example, again, a plastic bag. We could have no idea why our horse is freaking out, and it could be something in the bushes that we didn't notice. So it's definitely a good skill as a rider, trainer, horse handler, whatever, to be able to really be looking at not just the horse, but things that your horse is being exposed to. And horses have a very fast response time, which is a definite survival trait, especially because they are prey animals. Horses can be desensitized, like I had said, and need to learn what is and what is not harmful. For example, you know, a cougar is harmful, and we would like our horse to spook at that. That's a good thing. But a plastic bag or a wrapper or whatever is definitely not going to be harmful to them, but they don't know that. So we, as the trainers or riders, we need to be able to get that message to our horse, which might take a while sometimes, but it's definitely an important message for your horse. Horses forgive, but they do not forget, which is something that is very important to remember, especially, you know, if a horse gets into a bad situation, if someone mistreats a horse, they're going to remember it. And a lot of times you can see this with horses that have been, like, it's really sad, but if somebody beats their horse with a whip, that horse is most likely forever going to freak out if they see a whip, which is, you know, they may not have a problem with you, obviously, personally, but they, you know, they remember that feeling, and this is what hurt them and blah, blah, blah. And that's also a good reason why it is always a trainer's goal to make training experiences positive. So we do often give our horses negative reinforcements, which isn't a bad thing, but we just have to remember, you know, we don't want our horse to be scared of us. We want to get along with them. And, you know, we also do want to tell them, hey, you can't bite me, or be a brat or whatever, but we also want to definitely remember to reward all the good behaviors that our horses give us. It's very important because we like those behaviors. Horses are easily dominated. The horse is a herd animal where dominance hierarchy is always established. If done correctly, like I've talked about before, natural horsemanship, what you're trying to do is establish yourself as a part of your horse's herd, and you can create a relationship where you are dominant of your horse, which is easy to do if you are doing it correctly. And that's also a way to train your horse without making your horse excessively fearful of you, which is a good thing. We, again, like I said, don't want our horses to be afraid of us. And body language is another very unique thing to equine species. They're a highly social animal, and the horse communicates their emotions, their intents, their feelings to all their herd mates through both vocalizing and body language, and a lot of body language. And a person that is handling horses needs to be able to read a horse's body language and what they are, the message that they're trying to send to you. And I'm going to talk some more about horses' body signals. Body signals are horses letting us know exactly how they're feeling. The only problem is that, you know, obviously horse is not a language, so we have to kind of, again, look at their body language. So a horse's tail is one way to be able to recognize some feelings that our horses could be having. If their tail is lifted in the air at a higher level, you can tell that your horse is alert or excited about something. A lot of times when you let your horse, you know, before I ride my horse, I turn him out and I let him run around. And if he's excited or anything, get it all out so I can work with him on a more calm level. And a lot of times when you turn your horses out, they're going to get really excited and they're going to lift their tail up in the air and run around. And so it's definitely a way to show you that they are excited or alert. When their tail is held high, almost on top of their back, you could say, it's kind of lifted that high. It is a lot of times you can see that in foals, which are baby horses, and you can see that they'll have their tail almost flipped upside down on top of their back. And it means that they are, sometimes it can mean that they're very alarmed, but usually it means that they are in a very playful mood, which is always fun to watch, especially in foals. They're very cute. And if their tail is really low, it can be a sign of exhaustion, fear or pain, or sometimes submission as well. When their tail is relaxed, it kind of, there you go, the horse is relaxed, their tail is relaxed, they're probably going to be relaxed too. And if they are swishing their tail, they can be irritated and can be telling you a couple different things. Horses will swish their tails at flies, which are obviously irritating to them, but that's not really as crucial as sometimes your horse, depending on the rest of their body language, when they're swishing their tail, they're saying, hey, I'm about to kick, so you might want to move out of my way, because they're, you know, if they're upset or irritated about something. And of course, as people, we can upset and irritate them, but a lot of times you will see that behavior with other horses, and it's one way for a horse to show their dominance is, you know, they get in their little kicking, biting wars. But that's definitely a way that one horse in a herd will show another horse that they are dominant. And for horses' legs, if they're pawing, which is when they take one of their front legs and they'll repeatedly strike it at the ground, it can mean that they're frustrated. And if a horse stomps one of their front legs, it's a mild threat. It's a horse kind of saying, maybe get away from me, I'm eating, or again, could be irritated at a fly. And when they lift a back leg, that's like the next step from their tail swishing, get out of my way. They'll lift a back leg sometimes before they actually kick as another warning of, I don't like what you're doing. And another important thing is a horse's facial expressions. A horse, we call it snapping. This is seen a lot in foals when they show submission to other horses. They'll open their mouths and draw back at the corners, and they'll open and shut their mouth, which you can also call chewing, which is what I usually call it, and they'll lick and chew. And that's even not in foals, in adult horses as well, it's a sign of submission and I'm listening to you. And usually when they start doing that, depending on where you are or whoever they're being submissive to, they'll start turning their ears and flickering and listening to that person. Even if you're not making any noise, they're ready to listen to you because they have, that's what they're showing you. Another thing that you will see is the horse has their mouth open with their teeth barred. And that, as it kind of appears, is not a good thing. And it's showing aggression, possible biting or other bad behaviors like that. Flared nostrils usually mean that they're excited, alert. They're smelling something, perhaps. And another thing kind of related to that is called the Fleming response, which is when a horse smells something that is unusual, maybe they don't like it, and they're going to flip their top lip inside out, which looks very funny. And I'm sure if you look up horses smiling, you will see pictures of that. And it is very funny again. And I know a couple horses that they don't like coconut chapstick, which I always thought was really weird, but they'll do that when they smell coconut chapstick. But also something a little more realistic is when stallions smell a mare that is in heat, and the heat, when a mare's in heat, they're in season for breeding. And so a lot of times when a stallion smells that, they'll do that same response and flip their lip inside out. And lastly, when the horse's ears, which are an important thing to look at, when they're neutral, they're kind of relaxed, they're not trying to show any specific feelings. When their ears are flat back against their head, means that they are not happy. And it could be at a person, another horse, but it is a sign of aggression. And when their ears are pricked in the forward direction, it means that they are alert, paying attention, and they could have their ears pricked forward. They could also have them pricked to a side, listening to one side, and they're alert and listening. Another thing that you'll see sometimes is when a horse's ears droop towards, away from their body, directly outwards. It can mean that they're exhausted, tired, and that general feeling. So that is going to wrap it up for this segment on some natural survival traits of horses. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, and we'll be back in a couple minutes.
Like that, you got that little tattoo playing peekaboo on your back. Yeah, if you wanna impress me, baby, here's my plan. All you gotta do is put a drink in my hand. Yeah, fill it up, I'll throw it down. When you gotta do is put a drink in my hand. Yeah, fill it up, I'll throw it down. I got a little hungover, still hanging around. Yeah, that hair of the dog is howling, hey there, man. All you gotta do is put a drink in my hand. That hair of the dog is howling, hey there, man. All you gotta do is put a drink in my hand. Now, woo, hey. Now that you can have me, you suddenly want me. Now that I'm with somebody else, you tell me you love me. I slept on your doorstep, begging for one chance. Now that I finally moved on, you say that you miss me all of. What you do best, saying there's nothing you won't do to get me to say yes. You're impossible to resist, but I wouldn't bet your heart on it. It's like I'm finally just a beautiful mistake. Who do you think you are? Who
do you think I am? Hey, this is DJ Detour back with my show Behind the Bit. And in this segment, I am going to talk to you guys about some interesting equine-related news that's kind of weird. So the first one is about zebra stripes. Zedonks, Zorses, Zonkies, and Zebroids are all hybrids of a horse or donkey and a zebra. Horsewoman Claudia Wide of Germany believes that zebras have a one-up on horses. Zebras are able to naturally repel insects such as horseflies with their striped coat patterns. Instead of using the classic means of repelling pests, Wide chooses to use cattle paint and paint stripes on her horse to help deter horseflies. Scientists appear to have accepted this theory. Flying insects such as flies and mosquitoes use visual cues to help find their next meal. Apparently, such flying insects find zebras have reduced optical attractiveness compared to solid colored animals. The study concludes, this result demonstrates the visual protection of striped coat patterns against attacks from blood-sucking insects such as horseflies, who are also known to transmit lethal diseases. But painting your horse every day is definitely not realistic for most people. So, this story kind of brought me to the question of using a fly sheet that is zebra striped. Because I know I have definitely used fly sheets before, as well as other types of fly protection, including fly sprays, which are spray pesticides, as well as natural fly sprays. And I talked a couple shows ago about some products that I really love, and one of them is a fly spray. But it's the fly spray that I like is called Tri-Tech, and I want to say it's $25.99 to $29.99 usually. And that's for one bottle of fly spray. And it does not, especially during summer when flies are all out there, it doesn't really last you very long. And on the bottles, usually it says that they work for up to 14 days, which if you have a horse and you've ever used a fly spray, you know that is not true. And that they do not last long at that. They don't last 2 weeks. They maybe last a couple hours if we're lucky. And there's also other things that we'll use, like roll-on fly sprays and gel fly sprays, to kind of try to protect our horses after we leave them at the barn or in your yard or wherever your horse is. We try to protect them longer than we are physically with them. And even with fly sheets, the horses are still going to go and they're going to attack your horse's belly and it's going to be unpleasant. So my question is, if using a zebra printed blanket fly sheet or sleazy, which I also have talked about before, a sleazy is a spandex blanket, I guess, for your horse, you could say. And it's mainly to help them stay clean, like before shows. But if you got a zebra striped one, would it help detract flies without having to use all these nasty fly repellents that we use? So that's my question. I don't know that it would work, but I thought that it was very interesting to hear about how stripes naturally deter flies, and I'm curious if that works on people too. Like, if I wear zebra print, are they gonna stop bothering me? Because it, if you've ever been bit by a horsefly, it does not feel good. And in some other weird horse news, Tom McFeely, a bankrupt developer and former IRA hunger striker from South Dublin, learned this the hard way. After McFeely's plumber found 140,000 euros hidden in his bathroom, police raided his mansion. During the search, McFeely's mansion, police were shocked to discover a glass case housing a taxidermied horse with Coraline-style button eyes. DNA analysis later identified the horse as Shergar, a famous racehorse for winning the Epsom Derby by 10 lengths in 1981, and subsequently being named the European Horse of the Year later that year. Shergar was stolen from the barn that he was boarded at in Kildare County in Ireland by masked gunmen on February 8, 1983. Although it took 30 years, the mystery of what happened to Shergar is finally solved, giving his owners, trainers, and fans the closure that was never earned after the investigation and disappearance of the investigator, Jimmy Hoffa, in 1975. One more interesting aspect of the story was that one of the detectives noticed that inside of the case there was a small wooden plaque with the horse's name engraved. And the funny part about it is that it was engraved in a Comic Sans font, which, some interesting detail, and definitely not the font I would have chosen to engrave such a famous horse's nameplate. Anyways, very interesting story. Glad that they found him. Interesting way to find a taxidermied horse in somebody's house when you are investigating for stolen money. But they found him, so all of his trainers, thank goodness, have some closure now. And lastly, in an attempt to do a good deed and save two miniature ponies named Mozart and Polly from a slaughterhouse in Germany, two women learned that police frown on putting miniature ponies in your vehicle, regardless of the altruistic reasoning behind the act, especially when you're driving on the Autobahn, apparently. The two rescuers were released with only a warning that driving with an insecure load is illegal. The kind officers arranged for Mozart and Polly to be taken refuge in a nearby field to graze until the woman found an appropriate transportation for the two little ponies. Apparently there's some interesting stories going on in Germany involving horses right now. But that last one was definitely very interesting. I have seen people here transport miniature ponies in their vehicles, and it is definitely not a good idea. So if anyone wants to rescue some miniature ponies from anywhere, I would not recommend putting them in your vehicle. Apparently, definitely don't do it in Germany because they do frown on it. They do frown on it here as well. So that is going to wrap it up for this segment on some interesting horse news. We'll be back in a couple minutes. This is DJ Detour on my show Behind the Bit, and you're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.
Dreams are rolling down across the places in my mind, and I've just had a taste of something fine. The future hides and the past just slides, England lies between, floating in a silver mist and so clean. And California's shaking like an angry child will, who has asked for love and is unanswered still. And you know that I'm looking back carefully, 'cause I know there's still something there for me. But you said Morocco, and you made me smile, and it hasn't been that easy for a long, long while. And looking back into your eyes, I saw them really shine, giving me a taste of something fine, something fine. Now if you see Morocco, I know you'll go in style. May not see Morocco for a little while, but while you're there, I was hoping you might keep it in your mind to save me just a taste of something fine. May God bless and keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build a ladder to the stars and climb on every rung, and may you stay. May you grow up to be righteous. May you grow up to be true. May you always know the truth and see the light surrounding you. May you always be courageous. Stand upright and be strong. And may you stay.
This is DJ Detour back with my show Behind the Bit on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So for this segment, I'm going to talk about something that I think is quite interesting and I don't think most people probably even know exists, and it is guide miniature ponies. We all have seen guide dogs and people using guide dogs and different various types of service dogs. But why couldn't a miniature horse do it? And there were some people who had a great idea and made it. They followed through with their idea, and now there are many people who use miniature ponies. Not many. There are a few people who use miniature ponies as a animal to guide them. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the history. In 1998, while on a horseback ride in New York, Janet and Don Burleson of North Carolina realized how their horses were able to sense on their own when to cross the street. Janet recalled watching a blind rider compete in horse shows where the woman was able to give the horse directions and the horse navigated through the obstacles and other horses in the class. It was serving as her guide, and that was something that she never forgot. She wondered if a miniature horse could be trained as a guide animal for the blind. Janet had received training throughout the 30 years that she had been riding and dealt with equine behavior, but her urban experience changed her view of the behavior that she saw in one of their miniature horses named Twinkie. The animal often followed the Burlesons around like a dog and rode in the back of their minivan. And from her experiences, they began training miniature horses for seeing eye horses. The first trainee was Twinkie. And from the start, Burleson developed a rigorous training program for the miniature horses that was similar to a guide dog's, adding systematic desensitization training, which is similar to that of horses that are used for riot control. And that's kind of going back to what I had talked about bomb-proofing your horse. That's desensitization training, and that's what she's talking about here. And there were a couple setbacks. The first time that they took Twinkie to the grocery store, he grabbed a Snickers bar off the shelf and ate it. And the goal was to train these small horses to meet all the same requirements that guide dogs have to meet. One of the first people to use a guide horse was Don Shaw at age 17. He was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, an incurable eye disease that deteriorates your vision over time. In 1998, he attended a school for the blind to learn basic skills like how to read Braille. However, he stated, "I was shocked at how few options I had. I didn't want to struggle with a white cane, and I couldn't bear the idea of having a guide dog because of the grief that he had experienced with his beloved pet dog who died 10 years previous. I know I'd feel the loss of an animal and I'd relied on my independence even more acutely." So, he he fit into this program. He heard about the experimental program and decided he was going to apply to be one of the first people to use a guide horse. The Burlesons started training a miniature pony named Cuddles for Shaw. On March 6, 2002, he flew to North Carolina to meet Cuddles for the first time. And after some introductory work, Janet Burleson sent Shaw and Cuddles into a crowded store where the aisles were jammed with merchandise as well as people, and Cuddles navigated him through the store. I was about to become the world's first user of a guide horse, and I knew that there had to be skeptics, people who didn't believe horses had the right temperament to be service animals. After all, in the 20s, German shepherds began to be trained for the blind, and many people did not like that idea either. And the Guide Horse Foundation was founded in 1999, and that is the same foundation that Burleson started, and they are still providing people who do not have their complete vision, they are providing guide horses. And their mission statement is, our mission is to provide a safe, cost-effective, and reliable mobility alternative for visually impaired people. The Guide Horse Foundation is committed to delivering guide horses at no cost to the blind, relying on unpaid volunteers and charity donations to pay all travels, housing expenses for, I'm sorry, all travel and housing expenses for the blind handlers on-site training. So that's pretty cool. No cost. And if you are visually impaired, you can get a blind horse. I'm sorry, not a blind horse. You can get a seeing eye horse. And I know that if I was ever to lose my vision, that is definitely what I would want, being so passionate about equine. And so they were founded in 1999 as an experimental program, and there is a critical shortage of guide animals for the blind, and guide horses are an appropriate assistance animal for thousands of visually impaired people in the U.S. And some questions that people might ask is, who is an ideal guide horse owner? And horse lovers would be the first one. Blind people who have grown up with horses and understand equine behavior and understand the care that these ponies would need. Second would be individuals with allergies. Many people who are severely allergic to traditional guide animals may be able to find horses as a non-allergenic alternative for mobility. The third would be mature individuals. Many people report difficulty dealing with the grief of losing their animals. And horses, the general lifespan of a horse is about 30 years. And so that's definitely a much longer period of time for you to have your guide animal and not have to deal with the grief of losing one of your animals, as well as having to become reacquainted with a new guide animal. So it would make the process a lot easier, because you're going to be with this animal for a lot longer and you're going to share that bond for a longer period of time. The fourth one would be physically disabled people. Because of horses' docile nature, guide horses are easier to handle for individuals with physical disabilities. They're also strong enough to provide support and help the handler rise. Like from sitting, you can use them as a support because they are a much sturdier animal than dogs. And the fifth would be people who have a phobia of dogs. A lot of people are very fearful of dogs and are often more comfortable working with a tiny-sized horse. And lastly would be that they are an outdoor animal. Many individuals prefer a guide animal that does not have to live in their house when it is off duty. And miniature ponies are more than well equipped to be living outdoors. Although you can house train them, you obviously, it's not a requirement or anything, because horses naturally, they do live outdoors. Domestic horses as well as wild horses, they like it outside. And some of the big reasons that you would want a miniature horse as a guide animal is, one, the long lifespan. And according to the guide dog, according to guide dog trainers, usually guide dogs have a quote unquote useful life, a life that they are able to be in service for about 8 to 12 years. Well, on the other hand, a miniature pony could be used for 30 years or longer, even possibly. And the third is a better acceptance. Many guide dog users report problems getting access to public places because their guide dog is perceived as a pet instead of a service animal. And many people don't associate horses as pets like they do dogs and cats. And guide dog users report, guide horse users report that they are immediately recognized in public settings as a service animal. And the fourth would be their calm nature. Trained horses are extremely calm in chaotic situations. Police horses are a really great example of a well-trained horse that has to deal with some extremely stressful situations, and they handle it very well. Horses have a great memory. A horse will naturally remember a dangerous situation decades after the occurrence. So you can be assured that your guide animal will be very aware of situations that are going on and situations that are uncomfortable for them, which usually is not a wide range of them, but definitely one to pay attention to. Horses also have excellent vision, a very focused demeanor. They're safety conscious. They have high stamina and good manners. So those are some main reasons why you would want a guide animal to be a miniature pony. So to broaden everyone's horizons about that, because it's definitely something interesting that, you know, only happened about 15 years ago. So that is going to wrap it up for this segment on guide miniature ponies. You're listening to Behind the Bit on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. Whisper way down low, from the first time I saw you, it felt like coming home. If I never told you, I just want you.
Thank you.
Hey, this is DJ Detour back with my last segment on my show Behind the Bit today on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So for my last segment today, I wanted to talk about some horses that have made an impact on me. And I am going to start this segment with one horse in particular in mind. And he is one of our vaulting horses. And unfortunately, on Sunday night, my coach had to make the difficult decision to have him put down. So our entire team is greatly missing him. His name is Spartacus. And we usually used to just call him Star. And he is a Percheron draft cross. And he was a big, black, beautiful horse. And he definitely, I know, made an impact on a lot of people other than just myself. To me, he was the first horse that I ever vaulted on, which is special to me. But other than that, he was a teammate and an amazing athlete himself. He brought our team to many victories. I know he was the reason that I got to be the women's copper champion in 2009 because I got to vault on him. And vaulting is, again, a combination of gymnastics and dance on horseback. And without the amazing horses that allow us to do all this crazy stuff on them, it would not be possible without them. They are very important to us. And you definitely, over years of vaulting, form bonds with different horses. And times like this are extremely unfortunate. But I know he's important to me. He's important to everyone else on our team. He was an amazing horse. He definitely was one of the horses who did it all. He went on trail rides. He went to the beach. He was in parades. I know when I was riding my horse in the parade and my friend was riding Star, he was always really awesome in unfortunate situations. My horse was having like a melt down and freaking out because he was not appreciative of balloons that were everywhere. And Star kept his cool the whole time, and my horse is just smashing into the side of him and like cowering in fear. And he was very tolerant of my horse being such a brat and definitely buddied him through that. And him and my horse actually go way back. They have been in the same pasture for about 7 years at various different barns. And I know that they definitely had a friendship, and I'm sure that my horse is missing him too. But so we're all just very sad about it. He colicked on Sunday, which I have talked about is one of the most common things that happens to horses because they sadly don't have the ability to throw up, which sounds a little funny, but it's definitely, if they could, it would be such a wonderful thing. But it was a full blockage in his hind gut. And he was not passing it. So the only thing to do at that point is emergency colic surgery, which he had already had once in his life when he was a whole lot younger. And the likelihood of him recovering from such a large surgery, in addition to the fact that he was already not in the best health, he had some other health problems that were going on, and he was grouchy, and he was the grouchy old man at that point, and had arthritis and was very stiff to move most of the time. So she had to make that sad decision, but I'm very happy that he is not in pain anymore and will definitely be remembered by myself as well as all the other vaulters on our team and vaulters outside of our team who had the pleasure of meeting him and vaulting on him. He was a great horse to vault on. He had a very couch-like, his gaits were very smooth, and he was just wonderful. So that is one horse that's definitely made a great impact on my life, and I'm very sad that he is no longer with us. And the next horse I'm going to talk about is another one of our vaulting horses that we have currently. And his name is Dillinger, and we call him Dylan. He is in Oldenburg, and he is 17-1, which is a horse term for how tall he is. A hand is about 4 inches tall. So 17-1, that's how tall he was or is. And he is an amazing vaulting horse and definitely tolerates a lot of our nonsense that we do. And he's very great and very tolerant of it all. And we've had situations in a vaulting competition where banners came loose and there was stuff flopping everywhere and he had a vaulter on him, and he kept his cool and kept our vaulters safe. So he is a very important horse to me. He is retiring after our next competition, which is in the middle of next month. He will be retiring at that point to be a riding horse for someone who is currently riding him and just loves him to pieces because he is such an awesome horse. So he has definitely made a huge impact on me, and I'm going to be very sad that we're not using him as a vaulting horse anymore. Because he's definitely caused some trouble in the vaulting world. He doesn't like to put his head down like he's supposed to and like all the other horses are supposed to. So we've definitely found lots of tricks and loopholes to make him happy. So that is Dillinger, an awesome horse that has made a huge impact on me. The next horse I'm going to talk about is a whole lot smaller than these guys, and her name is Pebbles. And I showed on her when I was a whole lot younger. And she is a Welsh pony cross. I'm not 100% sure what she's crossed with. But she's a little pony. And if you've ridden a pony before, you know that they are little snot brains sometimes. And they like to get in trouble. And they like to get you in trouble. And she has dumped me in the dirt more times than any other horse I've ever been on. And she definitely taught me a lot through that and made me a more courageous rider, I think, because I had learned over time with her how to deal with all of her nonsense, which prepared me for a lot of other horses that I have dealt with throughout my equine career. Yeah, she definitely prepared me for a lot of it, because she just would, we call it testing people. She would do whatever the heck she wanted and see if she could get away with it or not. And I thankfully had a really good trainer at the time who pushed me till I would cry and then keep saying, "Keep going, you're fine," which was really good for me and definitely taught me how to deal with that little pony who, like I said, I used to show a lot, and we were a really great team after we worked through all the testing nonsense. And the last, one more horse I wanted to talk about was a horse named Excalibur, who was an ex-race horse, and I think I was about 7 when I was riding him, and he was 3 and huge, and he wasn't crazy, but I've fallen off horses more times than I have fingers and toes, and I stopped counting a very, very long time ago, and he is the only horse I can remember falling off of. And I know my mom had a little panic attack because it knocked the wind out of me, and I didn't want to get back on, and that was the only time I can remember ever not wanting to get back on a horse. And the trainer that I had then, who taught me a whole lot of stuff, made me get back on. And I'm very glad now that she did, because I think that helped me not be so fearful to get back on a horse, because they definitely can sense that, and then that's going to cause you a whole bunch more problems. So that definitely helped build me up to be a stronger rider. And I can't remember, like I said, any time since then that I've ever not wanted to get back on a horse that threw me on the ground. And the last horse that I want to talk about is my horse. And I have had him for 7 years now. And he will be 13 this year. And when I got him, he was 5. And he definitely needed a lot of work. He was young and wanted to do whatever he wanted to do and wanted to go this fast, and I didn't want to go that fast. And he definitely taught me a lot and made me be consistent with him, because when I was not consistent with him, it showed. And I definitely, it's very interesting and very cool for me to be able to see how far I have come with my horse as a team. And it's very interesting to see how he acts with other people, which is sometimes embarrassing when he tries to take advantage of people, which he would never do to me anymore, but he definitely did in the beginning. So it's very cool to see a relationship like that form over lots of years of hard work, and very enjoyable hard work. So today I have talked about some natural instincts of horses and some natural behaviors. I talked about some weird horse stories, including the rediscovering of Sugar, the horse who was stolen and found 30 years later. So I'm glad that all those trainers have that closure. I also talked about miniature ponies and how they can be used as guide animals, and how they are a better choice than perhaps a guide dog, and a much cooler choice in my opinion. And I also talked about a couple horses that have made a really big impact on my life. You are listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, and this is going to wrap up my show Behind the Bit. You can catch it next Wednesday from 3 to 4 o'clock. Have a good day.